So the goal for this morning would be to finish the perek. Don and daf lamed aleph on the base, and then imritz Hashem to begin the new perek, which is on daf lamed beis amid aleph. That's the fourth perek. So the last thing we discussed was the shita of Rav Nachman. And that's regarding shlish. So it means that the malve and the love wrote up a shtar milve, which is obviously a proof in the hands of the malve, but they deposited that shtar in the hands of a shlish, of a third person. And here we have a svara, a compelling logic that we should believe that shlish to claim that the shtar is no longer valid, it was paid up already. That's called iboy kalse, because the shlish was given the authority to destroy the shtar. The shtar was given into his hands or her hands. So since he or she could burn the shtar, therefore he or she should be believed to say that the shtar was paid up. And says Rav Nachman, I have an exception to the rule, a limitation to that rule. And that is, kevan dischazek b'beit dina. Those are the first three words on daf lamed aleph amid beis. So it means the following. The chachamim were mesakin what's called kiyum shtaros. And the shtar has to be authenticated by Bezdin. And once they do so, the shtar becomes a full-fledged shtar. And at that point, iboy kalsi lo amrin. And according to Rav Nachman, we no longer give credibility to the shlish to claim that the shtar was already paid up. Because once Bezdin has the shtar, and they authenticated the signatures through kiyum shtaros, that gives the shtar a separate power. And Rashi says, Alima, if you take a look at the second line in Rashi, Alima means the shtar takes on new dimensions, and we no longer can passel the shtar by saying that it was already paid up without Bezdin giving its approval, and the Lova proving that he indeed paid up the shtar. So Iboy Kalsay no longer applies once the shtar has been verified and authenticated by Bezdin.
So when Netizan and Bezdin have written it down, they must have some record.
Right, that's what I suggested yesterday, but today I saw that Tosus gives it a slightly different twist, and he wants to say that once the existence of the shtar has been established in the court, then at that point she no longer has control. She, the shlish, no longer has control over the shtar, and therefore at that moment in time she doesn't have the boy kalse. Then if she gets back the shtar a second time, we do not recreate that original credibility. We don't give her that nemunus of iboy kalse once the shtar was out of her possession. I'll tell you what bothers Tosus, even though I think Tosus' pshat is also very challenging, but Tosus doesn't understand. Okay, so you're telling me the shtar is a shtar mekuyam, and it is ischazik bebeit dina, but so what? She can still burn the shtar. It means all the credibility we gave her is because she has the power to destroy the shtar. Now, yesterday the shtar was in the hands of Bezdin. Today the shtar is back in her possession and she can burn it. So why should Rav Nachman argue that she forfeits her credibility based on the fact that she could destroy the shtar? So what if Bezdin authenticated the shtar and they gave the shtempel, they wrote a henpeck on the shtar? It doesn't matter. She can still destroy the shtar. But Tos wants to say that Iboy Kalse is an emunis that's time bound, meaning it has its statute of limitations. It's limited to this following way. It's restricted as long as she has an iboy kalse, and that iboy kalse was never removed, then she's believed. But if at some point in time, the Ibai Kalsay terminated because the shtar was taken out of her possession and handed over to Beis Din, that already from Mikan Olahaba, from now on, removes her demonis. Again, if we were learning this, we would have to figure this out. Esvei Ravel Rav Nachman. I have a brisa that Lechora contradicts Rav Nachman. And this brisa deals with what we call a shovar. A shovar is a receipt. It's called in the language of the brisa simpon. That receipt, once it's produced by the Lova in Beis Din, it's evidence against the Malva. That means even though the Malva has a shtar milva in his hand that says that Shimon borrowed such and such an amount of money, but nevertheless Shimon has a simpon and it has two witnesses signed on it to the effect that he paid up. Again, it's a little bit odd that the Lova didn't take back the shtar from the Malva, but that was maybe an oversight on his part. Or alternatively, the law was established that if he has a shtar that has a date on it that indicates that subsequent to the date on the shtar milva, he indeed paid up, and that shtar has the signature of two edim, that counters and nullifies the power of the shtar milva in the hands of the malva. However, like any shtar, yiskayim bechosmav, a shtar is not valid until it is certified, it is authenticated by Beis Din, meaning the two witnesses signed on the shtar are now subpoenaed before Beis Din. They appear before the court and they indeed recognize their signatures. Ain't all of Edim, but if there are no signatures on the shtar, then it depends. If it's v'yotze mitachas yidei shlish, if somebody was given possession over this shtar, that's called a shlish, and that shlish is now testifying to its authenticity, meaning even though we don't have witnesses on the shtar, so you would say therefore the shtar is absolutely meaningless. Oshe yotze achar chisum shtaros. We could have another case, another scenario in which this shovar is valid, even though, despite the fact there are no witnesses signed on the shovar, and that is where the shovar was added to the original shtar. Normally, in most cases, the simpon is a separate document, but you could also create a simpon by adding on the bottom of a shtar. So you have a shtar milva, which testifies to the fact that Shimon borrowed 1,000 from Reuven. Now, underneath the signatures of the shtar, and not only that, there's also a testimony of Beis Din on the bottom of the shtar. That's called Yotze Achar Chisum Shtaros. And on top of that, there is a shovar that's written. Again, only the nusach of the shovar, which means that so-and-so, Mr. Lova, we'll call him Shimon, paid up the chov to Reuven. In such a case, kosher, we validate the shovar, because how is it possible that the malva would have allowed this shovar to be added to his shtar? He would only do so, apparently, if he indeed was repaid, if the loan was paid up.
And that would explain why it's in the hand of somebody else and not in his hand.
Right, and this brisa testifies to the fact that if this document, let's say in the case where the simpon was a separate document, was in the hands of the shlish, even though there are no signatures on it, and it wasn't added as an addendum to the shtar milva, nevertheless the shlish is believed to validate that shtar simpon, which means to claim that indeed the lova paid up the malva. Alma, we see that shlish mehemon, the shlish is believed. And it would seem that this is a contradiction to Rav Nachman, because since in the case of the Brisa, the Shlish is believed to authenticate the Shtar and testify to the fact that the Lova paid up the Malva, even if the Shtar Milva was already certified by Beis Din, meaning there already was a henpeik in Beis Din, and there are no two Edim to testify and validate the henpeik, I'm sorry, the simpon, meaning the shover element here, nevertheless we give credibility to the third party. So at one point in time, this shtar was given over to Beis Din, and it was out of the hands of the shlish, but nevertheless, once it was given back to the shlish is given credibility because of Iboy Kalse. And you see here against Rav Nachman, that's what it says here, Tuf to the Rav Nachman, that we refute Rav Nachman from this brisa because the shlish is believed even though there's an eschazik bebeidina with regard to this shtar. Ki osar avdimi omar av Yochanan.
I don't know if we can answer it now. Tufta and kashe.
Tufta usually means that there's no answer to this question.
Well, when it says kashe,
kashe means there's an answer, but it's a dochuk answer, and the Gemara doesn't even bother with it. Ki osar avdimi omar av Yochanan li olam mevi raya v'soser. Meaning the baldin always has the right. This is going to reflect, again, let's go back to our Mishnah. There was a machlokes between Rav Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim in our Mishnah as to whether or not the Baldin has unlimited rights to bring in new evidence, meaning rights to bring in evidence even after the final din, the judgment has been handed down. So the judgment was handed down against Shimon, and he has to pay Reuven, but now Shimon comes back into Bez and he says, I have a shtar, I found two witnesses to testify on my behalf. So
it doesn't appear another time, it can be a long time
off. So there are different cases. There's one machlokas between the Chacham Rav Shimon Gamliel in a case where Bez Din itself set up a time limitation. They said up to 30 days, and Rav Shimon Gamliel rejects the validity of such a time limitation because maybe he couldn't find witnesses until after that 30 days. And then there's another case where the Lov himself was questioned by Beis Din, do you have any other evidence to support you before we give the final verdict? And he admitted that he has no evidence. And then your case, Doc, would be correct, that according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, he has an unlimited amount of time to bring his testimony, where the Chachamim disagree with Shimon Gamliel, says no. He's already admitted that he has no testimony. Any testimony he brings in is already suspect to Sheker. So how does Rabbi Yochanan Paskin in this case? And there are different statements of Rabbi Yochanan that seem to contradict one another, because his opening statement, Rabbi Yochanan, was Li Ola Mevi Raya Listar V'Soser. And that seems to indicate that there's no limit whatsoever to the ability of the Baal Din to bring in new evidence into court and undermine the original Psak Din. Until he himself finally declares, I have no more evidence. V'yomar kirvu ploni uploni ve'iduni. After he admits that he has no more evidence, he says, wait a minute, let so-and-so come in and testify on my behalf. And this seems to be a contradiction, because Hagufa Kasha, Amrit Yistateim Tanosov, is Asoim L'Rabbana, meaning that the first opening statement of Rabbi Yochanan seems to reflect the Shita of the Chachamim, that there is a time limitation beyond which he, the Baal Din, can no longer bring in evidence. And that's called Achi Statem Tanosov. Rav Shimon Gamliel would not accept that time limitation. He holds that even though the Baal Din made a statement in court that he has no evidence beyond this, he can still bring in evidence. So the first opening statement of Rabbi Yochanan, what we call the Reisha, that seems to support the Chachamim against Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. But on the other hand, the Seifa, V'hadar Amarta, and then Rabbi Yochanan added, Kirvu Ish Ploni, Uploni Ve'iduni, that if the Baal Din says, you know, bring in so-and-so and so-and-so, that does not, that's the only case in which the Baal Din has forfeited his ability to bring in evidence. That was the most extreme case in the Mishnah, which even Rav Shimon Gamliel would accept, that if he says, I don't have any evidence, and then he points to so-and-so and say, well, please come in and testify on my behalf, even Rav Shimon Gamliel accepts that that looks very suspicious and we cannot accept the Eidim. I saw in Rav Shimon Gamliel. If you've already established in the Reisha Rabbi Yochanan that you're passing like a Rabbanan, then why did you make the statement in the Sefer that, oh, in this case, he loses his ability to bring in evidence, which sounds like you're reflecting the Shita of Rav Shimon Gamliel. V'chitema. It's unbelievable. The Gemara analyzes the words of Rabbi Yochanan as if it was a Mishnah to try to figure out the Reisha in the Sefer. V'chitema kula Rav Shimon Gamliel. Maybe Rav Yochanan Haskins like Rav Shimon Gamliel from the beginning to the end. But there's no Reisha and a Sefer here. There's all one unit. Ufrushi kamafarish. And the Sefer is just an interpretation. You know, make sure you don't misunderstand my Reisha. My, what did I mean when I said, Achi yistatem tanosov, Achi yomar kirvu ploni uploni eiduni. At the point in which he did something very suspicious, and Tolkidei Dibur, he says the following two sentences, the Baldin. He says, I don't have any evidence. And then he takes a deep breath and he points to two people and he says, all right, come in and testify on my behalf. Like, what was going on over there? That's very suspicious looking. But basically what we're saying now in this interpretation, Rabbi Yochanan, is that from soup to nuts, from A to Z, Rabbi Yochanan accepted the Shita of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. But that's impossible. Why? Because Rabbi Yochanan himself committed himself elsewhere that we don't paskel Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. And this we learned yesterday, if you remember, that there are three exceptions to the rule. In general, the rule is we paskin like Rav Shimon Gamliel, but barring three cases, that's called Eruv, Sidon, and Raya Achrona. Arev. That's Masecht Erevin. Arev has to do with the laws of a cosigner, of a guarantor on a loan. And it's Machlokas Chacham and Rav Shimon Gamliel about an Arev. And then there's Machlokas that took place in Sidon about a different sugya. Then there's Raya Achrona. Raya Achrona means after, subsequent to the verdict that was handed down by the Beis Din, and he wants to bring a Raya. And Rav Shimon Gamliel allows him to do so. The Chachamim say, no, he's not allowed to bring a Raya. V'omar Rabba Baruch Hanan Rav Yochanan Kol Mokum Sheshana Rav Shimon Gamliel B'mishnah Seinu, whenever Rav Shimon Gamliel argues against the Chachamim in our Mishnah, Locha Kemosu Chutz, May Orev V'tzidon Raya Achrona. The case of Raya Achrona is our case. So Rav Yochanan explicitly goes on record as paskening against Rav Shimon Gamliel in the case of Raya Achrona, which is our sugya here. Therefore, we're going to have to interpret this strange Reishon Sefer that came out of the mouth of Rabbi Yochanan in a way that it could be reconciled with Rabbi Yochanan's commitment that we pass on like the Chachamim. Ella, but rather, let's interpret Rabbi Yochanan's statement in the following Kiyos, Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yehudam, Rabbi Yochanan, Li'olam Mevi Raya V'soser, V'yomru Lo Hava Edim. I skipped a few words here. Li'ola mevi raya v'soser. The Baldin always has the right to introduce new evidence and undermine the verdict. Achi istatem tanosav. Until the point, and here we're going to have to add a few words to Rabbi Yochanan to embellish him, until the point in which Beis Din turns to the litigant and says the following: Yomru lo havei edim v'omru ein edim havei raya v'omer ein lo raya. What does yistatem tanosav mean? That was a very ambiguous phrase. He sort of contradicts his own claims, and that means when Beis Din asks him, "Do you have any support for your claim? Can you adduce any evidence?" And he admits he has no evidence. Do you have witnesses? I don't have witnesses. Do you have any other proof, a shtar or something? I have no evidence. From thence on, he can no longer bring in proof, which is against Rav Shimon Gamliel, paskening like the Chachamim, that he himself was so same tanosav. He put the blockage, he closed the door, locked the door in front of any possibility of bringing new evidence. So basically, this now reconciles the two statements of Rabbi Yochanan. The original statement of Rabbi Yochanan which seemed to some extent to accept Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. No, if you interpret Rabbi Yochanan's statement in this light, he's accepting Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, and that fits in with another statement of Rabbi Yochanan, namely that we paskin like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel.
I would imagine that he's stopped and he pays up. At what stage can he pay up and still go back and argue? So I would think if he pays up...
According to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, you mean? According to Rachamim, he has already admitted that he has no evidence. But you're asking according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, who says that despite his confession that he has no evidence, he can still adduce new proof and evidence. What happens if he's already paid up? I don't think that would make any difference, Doc, unless you know, if you have some Rishonim that I don't know about. I would say it makes no difference according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. According to Chachamim, in general, it doesn't matter. Even if he hasn't paid up, he's going to have to pay up because he can no longer bring in evidence. He himself has admitted he has no more evidence. According to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, well, now he discovered new evidence and therefore we should allow him to adduce new evidence. It wouldn't make any difference, I don't think, whether he's already paid up. Because Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says that will be so as Adim.
And Rabbi Yochanan says
that
if he answers, I've got no more evidence and I've got no more witnesses, that's it.
That's it.
So he would argue if he pays up.
Yistatim Tanosev. And then again, Yistatim Tanosev would apply even if he hasn't yet paid up. We're going to force him to pay up. Now the Gemara adds another piece from Rabbi Yochanan. We stopped in the middle of Rabbi Yochanan's statement. Aval bo edim imedina sayam. There are situations in which Beis Din will realize that new evidence came in and it was impossible for the litigant, for the Baal Din, to even anticipate that these edim existed, and therefore he did not, he admitted that he has no more evidence, but that's because how could he even dream of it? We had a case yesterday about a young child who inherits his father, and he says, I don't know if my father paid up this debt or he didn't pay up this debt. And there we said that when he ran out of Beis Din, he was crying, and the people understood that what was going on, and all of a sudden Adam came in. We couldn't expect a child who doesn't know what goes on in his father's finances to have known that there were Adam out there. Here also, all of a sudden Adam came from Medina Sayam. Oh, shahaisa diskia shel aviv mufkedes biad acher. Now the word diskia has a literal interpretation, and then it's used in a certain way in shas, has a particular flavor or context. A diskia is really a sack, but the Chazal very often use diskia as a reference to a sack of shtaros. A person who has many shtaros, let's say he borrows money and therefore he has shtaros that prove that he paid up, or he lends money and has shtaros that prove that people owe him money, he keeps them in a diskia. Now, in this particular case, the Baal Din had no idea that there was a diskia of his father, which was full of documents, that was handed over biad acher, that was in the possession of someone else. Is then hareza mevi raiva soser. In such cases where we understand very well why the Baal Din was unaware of these pieces of evidence that could support his claim, he can adduce this evidence, and again he could undermine the original psak Beis Din. Even according to the Chachamim, so Rabbi Yochanan on the one hand accepts the Rabbanan against Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, but there are limitations. There are cases where even the Rabbanan would agree that it wasn't olal daito. He didn't entertain the possibility that he had testimony, that he had evidence, and therefore it's acceptable. We understand why he now all of a sudden brings this evidence into court. Ki yaser avdimi omer Rabbi Yochanan hatokef es chaver bedin. In other words, Shimon is being harassed by Reuven. Reuven is a very aggressive Baal Din, and he wants to take him into a Beis Din. And now the question is, can Reuven force Shimon to show up in a particular Beis Din? We've touched on a sugya similar to this. Echad Omer Nidon Kan, v'Echad Omer Nelech L'Mokom Avad. This aggressive, we'll call him plaintiff, is saying, you know what, let's judge the case right here. We have a local court, maybe it's not on the highest level, but it's a local court. And the Lova says, the Tzadik Neged, he claims, yo, I don't want to be judged here in the local court. I want to get a fair decision from a higher court, which is called Beis Avad. Beis Avad is a larger city that has Talmidei Chachamim, and those Talmidei Chachamim have a Beis Din. I want to go to the higher court in a different city. Is Kofen Osovielich Lemakom Havad? According to this statement, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, the Lova has the right to say, you know what? I don't want to be judged here. And this is a very problematic statement. Why? Because as a general rule, the Malve, the plaintiff, has a right to say, I want to be local here. It's going to take me a whole hassle. I have to give up a day of work in order to show up in a different city. And you owe me money. Why should I take that loss? Not only that, it could be the travel expenses will cost me more than the loan itself. And therefore, the Malva has a right to say to the Lova, I want to be judged locally. Here we have a statement attributed to Rabbi Yochanan to the effect that the Lova has the upper hand and he has rights to claim, let's go to the higher court in a different city. So Omar Lefan of Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Lazar was a Talmud of Rabbi Yochanan, he says, Rebbe, Misha Noshe B'chaver Mona, Yotzi Mona Mona, a person has money in someone else's hand, so he's got to send. He has to spend a mana, 100, in order to get his money back. That doesn't make any sense. You're going to have to force now the malva to take a loss of 100 on a loan of 100. So why did he lend the guy 100 in order to lose 100 to claim his 100 back? Elikofeno silver don beiro, but rather the malva has a right to force the lova, compel him to be judged locally. Itmar Nami, and now the Gemara is going to sort of reformulate the original statement, that problematic statement of Rabbi Yochanan. And again, here it depends on girsos, but according to one girsa, I'm going to read it according to one particular text. Omer Rav Safra, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Shnayim Shenis Atzmu Bedin. There are two litigants that have a financial quarrel. Echad Omer Nidon Kan. One is claiming, let's be local and go to the local Beis Din. The Echad Omer Nelech Lemakom Avad. Let's go to a higher court in a different city. Kofen Osov Vidan Beiro. That Rabbi Yochanan himself says, as he's quoted here by Rav Safa, the original quote was by Rav Dimi, that Enochinami, the Malva could force the Lova to be judged locally. But Vim Hutzrach Dovo Lishol. Now, what happens if the local court, since it's not made up of great scholars, they get stuck on an issue? So at this point, you can see it in one of two ways. One way is to say, you know, let's fold. You know, let's admit defeat. We, the members of this court, we don't have the capacity to decide this case, and now we have to go to the Beis Avad, send it to a higher court. Or alternatively, they could be in communication with a higher court. They could write a letter and explain the issue and what the question was, and they can get an answer response in mail. So that's what it says here. Rav Safra says, Vim Hutzrach Dover Lishol, if they have a question about how to decide the case, Kosvin Visholchen, they write that question and send it to the Beis Havad. Vim Omar Kisvu, oh, now is another question. When Beis Din issues a verdict, let's say, for example, they paskin that the Lov has to pay up, he's liable. Does the Lov have rights to demand a written explanation? That's called madantani. Madantani means, I want to know on what basis you came to the conclusion that I have to pay, that I'm liable. So this is what, and he wants to apparently use that, you know, that explanation and that opinion, you know, as it's described, to perhaps challenge the Baldin Shekinegdu in a higher court. So Omar, he declares, Kisvu utnuli me'eze tam dantani. So I want this document that explains on what basis you judge me. Is kosum v'nosin lo. Again, because this is a lower court. Once the malva forced the lova to show up in a local court, then the Lova now has a right to claim, I want this shtar, I want this document written, handwritten or signed by the members of the court, al matan toni. And the Rashi and Tosfos point out that as a general rule, the Baldin, the litigant who loses the case, he doesn't have rights to demand from Beis Din that I want this shtar. It reminds me of a sugya in Gittin. The question is whether or not a woman has the get, meaning after the Baal delivers the get to the woman, can she hold on to the get? And the reason why we're not so excited about that, we rather deposit the get in the hands of the Beis Din, is because if somebody lays their eyes on the get, they might find, you know, kotzel shel yud, that some mistake in the get, and then she got married to someone else. It's going to create mamzer. So we're not excited about exposing a psak Beis Din to a possible re-examination. You could always re-examine a case and find the nuance and then claim. But here, this is the exception to the rule, because here, the Baal Din was compelled to go to a Beis Din which was not of his choice, and therefore he has a right to claim, I want to get the shtar of Alma Dantani.
So he can't ask it if it is a Beis Din of his choice.
He cannot demand that we go to the Beis Din of his choice. No, why is that?
If he goes to the Beis Din of his choice,
then he cannot demand a shtar. It's only in this exceptional case where they compelled him against his will to show up and be judged in that court.
In the local court.
In the local court. Oh, take a look. He mentions Tosfosir Divir Maschel Im in footnote number 15. So I think that hopefully supports what I said. Okay, now that we've determined that in a debate between the Malveh and the Loveh, who has rights to compel whom to go to which Beis Din? It was the Malveh who has the rights. Now the Gemara wants to address a similar case in a different context. There's a Yavam and a Yavama. And after a woman falls for Yibum, she needs Chalitza to permit her to get married. The Yavam, that means the brother of the late Niftar who passed away, he insists that... let's say he's in China, that she come all the way to China, take a slow boat to China in order to get her chalitza. But she says, no, I'm here in Tel Aviv. I want you to come take a plane to Tel Aviv. So who has the upper rights to force whom to go to which, to who has to come, you know, what do we say? Does the mountain go to Mohammed or the other way around? Sayavama leches achar yavam lehatira. Now, when I first read this, what I thought is the following. That since she desperately needs the chalitza in order to allow her to get married, so you know what, beggars can't be choosy. She has to show up wherever the yavam is. You know, she's desperate. She needs the. But we'll soon see in a minute that that's not really the pshat here. That's not the omek pshat. In any event, let's just go through the Gemara. The Gemara says ad kama. In other words, to what extent can we force the yavama to show up in the place of the Yavam? Omer Rav Ami, afilu mitveria litzipori, which means from one side of the world to the other. Why does he give the example of tzipori, of Tveria to Tzipori? So the answer is that Tveria is a city with a prominent Beis Din. So Lechora, she could claim, well, when we're having this chalitza, why should we do it in front of the Beis Din where you are in Tzipori? That's a secondary Beis Din. Come to Tveria. Tveria was the main Beis Din of the time in that area. No, even so, she has to schlep all the way to Tzipori. But really what the Gemara means is she has to go, she's desperate, she has to go wherever he is. And he doesn't have to budge. Now, at this point, I thought that this was based on Svara. But I made a big mistake. Omer Rav Kahana, my krah. This has to be based on a pasuk. You know, sometimes the Gemara says, Ibai same a krah, Ibai same a svara. Here the Gemara just has a pasuk. And I was absolutely stunned by this pasuk and the way the Gemara interprets this pasuk. Beautiful drasha. It says, V'karolo zikne iro. That when they were ready for the chalitza, he, the Yavam, is summoned by this Canaan. Meaning by the Beis Din, right? But the Torah added one word, Iro, of his city. You could read that 1,000 times, never notice it. Velo, Zikne Iro, but not the Zikanim of her city. So the Torah went out of its way to paskin on this shaila. Whose city, and who has to come to who? He lives in that city, she's in that city. And the answer is, she has to go to his city. Again, my logic might be correct, but that's not the way the Gemara is operating. Maybe that's the pshat in the pasuk, but the pasuk is Xeris HaKosiv, Zikne Iro. Amar HaMeimar, Hilchasa Kofino Sovielich Lemokom Havad. The final decision, says HaMeimar, and this is a big surprise, that in the case of two Balei Din, we have the, you know, any Baal Din has the right to force the other Baal Din to go to the Beis Havad, to the higher court. And it seems like from the statement of HaMeimar, he's undermining what we said before, that the Lover, according to HaMeimar, indeed has the right to force the Malvah to go to a different city. Amalei Rav Ashi la Meimar, but wait a second. For Amar Rabbi Elazo, we have a statement of Rabbi Elazo that Kofin also vidon beiro, that the Malv has rights to compel the Lova to be judged locally, because as we said before, the Malva was a very good guy. He extended a loan. Now you're going to tell him that he's in the lower position. He has to schlep to the Yenemsvilt and pay $100 for the train in order to get his money back. And at the end of the day, he ends up with a loss instead of a gain. Hani Mili, says the Gemara, this is HaMeimar, Hei Chadika Amar Le Lova L'Malva. When does the ruling of Rabbi Eliezer apply? That's only where the Lova says to the Malva, let's go to the Beis Havad and schlep to the next city. Avol Malva. But let's say for example, just one second, Hani Mili, when do we say this din? Dika Amar Le Lova L'Malva. Right, that the Lova says to the Malva, let's go to another city. Aval Malva, let's say the Malva wants to go to the other city. So the Malva says, you know what? There's a substantial claim here that I have against you, Mr. Lova, and it's worth it for me to go to a higher Bezdin. Please come with me to another Bezdin. In such a case, that's where Amir Paskin Kofenosol Vielich LeBeis Havad. So again, it's a one-way street. The Lova cannot force the Malva to the Beis Havad, but the Malva could force to the Lova. And why? Eved Lova Leish Malva. It's a pasuk in Mishlei, which Gemara often quotes to indicate that it's the Lova who owes a debt of gratitude to the Malva, and therefore the Lova has to comply with the wishes of the Malva. And he's forced, he's compelled to schlep to another city, to the Beis Havad. Sholchulei Lemar Ukva. This is a strange Gemara, but we'll see if we can somehow make some sense of it. There was a Bezdin in Tveria, as we said before, that was a very significant Bezdin. And that was, of course, in Eretz Yisrael. Mar Ukva was a Rosh Bezdin in Bavel, and they sent him the following letter. And the first part of the letter lavishes praise on Mar Ukva. And what does it say in the first part of the letter? Lidziv. Ziv is the radiance. Lidziv lay. We're sending this letter to somebody who has a countenance that radiates. Kibas Bisya. Now Bisya is the daughter of Paro. And apparently she becomes a paradigm of someone who is on a very high spiritual level. She risks her life to counter against the Gzera of her father to save Moshe Rabbeinu. And she has a certain radiance to her. And your radiance is reminiscent of Bas Bisya. There's another possible pshat here, that the reference here is to Moshe Rabbeinu, because if you remember when Moshe Rabbeinu came down from Har Sinai, his countenance radiated. In any event, this letter is a compliment to Mar Ukva, as if to say that he has unbelievable wisdom, because the pasuk says that wisdom is reflected externally by the face that radiates. And you should know that even today people follow this this lead, and when they write a letter to a gadol, they open up with this statement. Shalom. Okay, now we get to the letter itself. Peace be with you. Ukvan habavli kaval kadomana. There was an individual by the name of Ukvan. We shouldn't confuse him with Mar Ukva. And he also had the same name, but he came from Bavel. And he came in front of our Bezdin here in Tveri with a complaint. Now, there are two ways of learning exactly what his complaint was. And he said, Yirmiya Achi, and if you take this literally, it means he was accosted, assaulted, that was the word I want to use. He was assaulted by his own brother, by the name of Yirmiya, and Hevir Alai Es Haderech. So there are different interpretations of what that means. I would accept the following pshat, that he cheated me. That's the Yad Ramah. But others, Rashi seems to assume that it means literally he castrated me. A very strange kind of case. In any event, this fellow, the victim, the so-called victim, is claiming damages. He wants to sue in a court of law. The Amru Lo. Now, this guy Yirmiya, the brother, the so-called assailant, he's located in Bavel. So therefore, Imru Lo, we're asking you, the great Mar Ukva, who presides over the Bezdin there in Bavel, Hesi'u v'yira panenu b'Tveria, force him to show up in our presence in Tveria, because here's where this fellow Ukvan, who's the victim of the crime, wants to sue him for damages. So the Gemara analyzes the language of this letter that was sent to Mar Ukva, Hagufa Kasha, and the Gemara finds a difficulty. Amrit Amru Lo Alma Dainuhu Atun. The language of Amru Lo seems to indicate that you should be able to judge the case over there in Bavel. But yet it says Hasi'u v'yira panenu b'Tveria. Coerce him to come in front of us in Tveria, we'll judge him here. Alma Shadru Hacha, send him here and the din will take place here in Tveria. So where is the din meant to take place? So the Gemara reinterprets the letter a little bit. Ella Hachikam, this is what the letter means. Imrule Dainu Atun. What you should do is tell Yirmiya, this so-called assailant, that you'll judge the case, and Itzayis Tzayis, if he's willing to be judged over there, that's fine. You judge the case. Being low, but if for some reason he refuses to be judged in the court in Bavel of Mar Ukva, then Hasi'u, find a way of pressuring him V'yira panenu b'Tveri, to send them to Tveri so that we can judge the case. So again, lechatchila, the Beis Din in Tveri was willing to have the case judged there in Bavel. But if Yirmiya, the Baal Din that's now being sued for damages, is unwilling to show up in Bavel, send us Yirmiya here and we'll judge him in Tveri. Now if you take a look here at footnote number 24, he says the following, that in truth Mar Ukva's Beis Din was greater than the Beis Din in Tveria, even though Tveria was a significant Beis Din, but Mar Ukva was the Reish Galusa, and he had a tremendous amount of authority. But again, there were great Talmidei Chachamim in the Beis Din in Tveria, and therefore the Baal Din has rights to be judged by the greatest court in his generation. And therefore the message was as following. You should judge the court over there, and if you know he would probably accept you as a court, as a Beis Din, because you're the greatest Beis Din in the generation. But if he refuses, and he says I want to be judged in Tveria, then send him over here for judgment. I think the chiddush of this whole piece of Gemara is that on the one end we're going to allow the local Beis Din to judge the case against the mazik, let's call him, against the nitba, and the nitba could therefore say, I'm not willing to schlep all the way to another city, but only under the condition that this local bezdin is the superior bezdin. So again, if we had time, Rabbo, so we'd have to go through the Shulchan Aruch very carefully and see exactly how we paskin on this business. Rav Ashi Omar Dine Knossos Havi. Rav Ashi has a new pshat to offer in this letter. They were talking about Knossos. Now, when we talk about Chavola, which is a case of physical assault, in America they call it assault and battery. I don't know if you... Is that the same? So in such cases, the Chovel, if he's found guilty, has to pay what's called Nezek Tzar Ripui Shevis and Boshes, five different categories of payment. Four of the five are called a Knas. Only Nezek is an actual loss and a compensation for financial loss. And therefore, in this case of Chavola, again, I'm assuming Rashi's pshat here, then there's a law of Knas. Ubibavel, we have a rule that where there was no smicha in Bavel, lo daininan dine knasos. For knas, you need a higher bezdin that's made up of smuchim, and that didn't exist in Bavel. And therefore, in truth, Mar Ukva, with all his greatness, would not be able to judge the case against Yirmiyah, because that was a case of a chovel, which is a knas, and ain't done in knasos b'bavel. So you might ask, if that be the case, why was this letter sent to Mar Ukva when Mar Ukva didn't even have the power and the authority to judge this case? And the answer is, k'day lachlok kavod l'Mar Ukva. They didn't want to just say to Mar Ukva, you know what, send them over here to Tveria, because you don't have the authority to judge this case. They were being very nice, and in a diplomatic way, they said, look, you know what, If you can judge the case there, judge it there. But Mar Ukva would certainly not take it upon himself to judge that case, because he doesn't have the authority to do so. Hadron Alecha Zebor. We actually started Zebor 2 weeks ago. Now we learn the Mishnah in Perek Echad Dinei Mamonos. This Mishnah is going to compare and contrast the dinim of Mamon with the dinim of Nefashos. In other words, monetary cases and capital cases. So first the Mishnah opens up with the commonality between the two. Echad dini mamonos, the echad dini nefashos, bedrisha uvechakira. And this is a very problematic statement, as the Gemara is going to analyze this. But at least on the simple level of pshat, the Mishnah is claiming that drisha and chakira, in other words, the way that we have to interrogate the eidim, is exactly identical in both cases. You would have thought that in Dine Nefashos, we have a higher demand, though there's a life at stake, and then we have to be Doresh V'choker, with all kinds of questions that we interrogate the Eidim, the witnesses, in order to come to a conclusion. But maybe in Dine Momenos, we can lower the standards. No. The Pasuk says, Shenemar Mishpat Echad Yielachem. The Pasuk in Vayikra tells us that there's one Mishpat for both, one law and statute that governs both Dini Mamonos and Dini Nefashos. So then the Mishnah says, okay, but the very fact that you had to work hard to prove that the laws regarding Dini Mamonos are the same as they are in Dini Nefashos, you're obviously admitting that Dini Mamonos are different than Dini Nefashos. And therefore that leads us to the next question. So Ma Bein Dini Mamonos and Dini Nefashos. So what is the difference between the two? And the Gemara answers, Dine Mamonos b'shlosha, and Dine Nefashos b'esrim u'shlosha. This is all based on a sugya at the beginning of Masechta Sanhedrin, which derives from various psukim, that Dine Mamonos, all you need is three judges. I think it says Elohim three times, to teach you three judges. But in the case of Dine Nefashos, which by the way, that includes even Shara Niskal, because Shara Niskal, the Torah says that it has to be judged as if it was a capital case. Those cases which are defined and categorized as capital crimes, they require a Sanhedrin Aktana, which is made up of how many judges? 23 judges. Now, if you take the number 23 and you divide it in half, well, it's an odd number, but you can get 12 versus 11, am I right?
Yeah.
So that's a majority of only one. That's going to be another case, another distinction between Dini Mominus and Dini Nefashis, which we'll get to in just a minute. But first, Dini Mominus poschin bein l'schus u bein l'chova. In the case of Dini Mominus, the opening argument in the deliberation, the kickoff, so to speak, of the deliberation of Beis Din in Dini Mominus could be either l'schus or l'chova, either in favor of the defendant or against the defendant, to find him liable. That's called bein l'schus u bein l'chova. V'dini nefashos poschin l'schus v'ein poschin l'chova. The initial argument of one of the judges in front of this Beis Din of 23 has to be in favor of finding the accused guiltless. Like, maybe he'll open up and say, well, you know, were you deliberate about it? Some sort of argument, because the initial claim, or I'm looking for a better word than claim, but the initial argument that's put forth by one of the judges, that to some extent sets the atmosphere for the entire case. Now, Rabosai, it's very interesting here that with regard to Drisha v'Chakira, we seem to be very strict in Dine Mominos, and we equate it to Dine Nefashos. But the Mishnah goes on to say that there are many differences between the two, and there are laws and regulations that govern Dine Nefashos that don't apply to Dine Mominos. So there's a carte blanche here in the case of Dini Mominus to start with an opening argument that could go this way in favor of the defendant, against the defendant. Or, for example, I'll give you another case. The Mishnah continues and says, Dini Mominus matin al pi echad. In other words, if there's a decision with a majority of one judge, so let's say there was a monetary case in front of a Beis Din of 23. We didn't need 23, but let's say they brought a monetary case in front of such a Sanhedrin, and the final decision was made at a vote of 12-11. That's a valid decision
either way,
and it doesn't matter whether it's bein l'schus bein l'chova. It's in favor of the plaintiff, or the defendant, or it's to find the defendant liable. But Dini Nefashos, when can you decide a case at a majority of 1, 12-11? That's only al pi echad l'schus, but al pi shnayim l'chova. In other words, a decision to condemn the accused in a capital case that's made by the majority of one judge is not a valid decision. So a 12-11 decision would not be valid in Dine Nefashos. Another example. Over and over again, Dini Mominus Machzirin, we could re-judge the case, Bein L'schus, Bein L'chova. There are no restrictions. If there's new evidence that comes into the court, they retry the case. But Dini Nefashos, Machzirin L'schus, V'ein Machzirin L'chova. If Beis Din has already condemned the accused in this capital case, then if new evidence comes in L'schus, to find in his favor to acquit him, then we'll open up the case again and we'll be so stressed at din. But if, on the other hand, new evidence comes in after they acquitted him and gave him a verdict of not guilty, we will not retry the case. Another example. Again, I'm trying to show you that all of this really fits into one package. Dine Mominus HaKol Melamdim Schus V'Chova. But Dini Nefashos HaKol Melamdim Schus V'Ein HaKol Melamdim Chova. In other words, there are various apprentices. I don't know, that's probably not a good word here. But there are students who come to watch the case when their Rebbeim are judging a case. And that's how they have Shimush Talmidei Chachamim. Right? They learn from watching the Beis Din and seeing how the judges on the court judge the case. And if it's a monetary case, and one of the students has something to say, you know, he wants to advance an argument, then he can do so in Dini Mominus. And again, it doesn't matter. There are no limitations. It's either l'chova or l'schus. But in the case of Dini Nefashos, if a student has an argument that's lizchus, that can somehow protect and acquit the accused, then that's fine. Let him state his argument. But if he wants to come up with an argument lechovah, he says, hey, Rabosa, you missed a certain point here that could lead us to condemn the accused, that they have no right to do. So Rabosai, I'm just going to take a break now for a second and point out to you that although the opening line in the Mishnah was based on the pasuk Mishpat Echad Yelachem to equate the standards and the demands of testimony in Dinei Momonos to that of Dinei Nefashos with a very high standard of Drisha V'Chakira, yet the Mishnah goes on and on, we didn't even finish the list yet, to differentiate between Dine Nefashos and Dine Mamonos. And the question, what?
Yeah, to show the differences.
So the question is, what about Mishpat Echad Yelachem? So I think there are many answers to this question. I'm just going to mention one of them. And that is that there's a difference between the standards that we have to set and the demands that have to be met in order to qualify the witnesses, as opposed to what we call the Shavtu Ha'eda V'Tzilu Ha'eda. There are two psukim. One pasuk says, Mishpat Echad Yelachem, to equate Dini Mamonos with Dini Nefashos. The other pasuk says, V'Shavtu Ha'eda V'Tzilu Ha'eda, that the Beis Din, as a representative of the community, V'Tzilu, they have to do whatever they can to acquit the accused and save his life. V'Hitzilu literally means to save his life. And that sets up a whole new standard in terms of the laws and regulations of judgment with regard to a capital case. So the entire list that that the Mishnah enumerates the differences here between Dini Nefashos and Dini Mamonos, that's all within the context of V'Shavtu Ha'eda V'Hitzilu Eda. And that's a unique rule that governs judgment in Dine Nefashos in capital cases. But nevertheless, in terms of the evidence itself, and how to establish the witnesses as reliable, there the pasuk says Mishpat Echad Yelachem, and the Torah is going to tell us when do the witnesses pass the test, and that means that we need Drisha V'Chakira. Alright, let's go on. Dine Mamonos Hamalamed Chova Melamed Zchus. Let's say Reuven is one of the judges on this Sanhedrin Akhtana, the 23 judges in a capital case. And he has two possibilities. He can stand up and present an argument in favor of acquittal or an argument in favor of condemnation. Well, he's got to make his decision. If he starts with an argument lechova, he can always change his mind. And now he says, you know, I thought it over, and in the course of the deliberation, I came up with another argument that I want to present to the Beis Din lezchus. But the other way around, hamalamid zchus, if he stood up in front of Beis Din in his initial argument, and he wanted, and the argument was to acquit the accused, then he cannot now come back and say that he wants to. He wants to, now again, so in Dini Mamonos, it's irrelevant. No matter what that judge presented as his original argument, whether it was L'schus or L'chova, you can change it in either direction. But Dini Mamonos, Nefashos, here again, V'Tzilu Ha'eda, Hamalamed Chova, although if he started with an advanced argument to condemn the accused, he can now change it L'schus, that's true, but not the other way around. Aval Malamed Schus, if his initial argument was in favor of acquittal, he cannot change his position. Very fascinating. The Gemara is going to derive this later on in Daf Lamed Daled from Psukim, that the argument itself that puts that Baldin into a very powerful position that he cannot rescind, because again, you know, the Beis Din was very impressed by his original argument, and they saw that this judge is really, he's wowing them, and now he's going to change his mind. We better take this very seriously and give extra weight to the judge who now changes his decision towards chova, and that we can't allow, because again the pasuk says v'itzilu ha'eda.
This is very similar to the previous one, except the previous one was anybody could give a chova.
In other words,
yeah,
the previous one. The meaning when you say the previous
Akol
one,
Malamdin.
Oh, Akol Malamdin, right. Hakol Malamdin. Excellent. Dini Maman is done in Bayom V'Gomer Balayla. In a monetary case, if they began the case during the day, because the Torah requires, the Gemara is going to go through the Psukim, that judgment takes place at day. Let's say the judgment and deliberation spilled over into the night, they could hand down a final verdict at night. But Dini Nefashos, done in Bayom V'Gomer Bayom. The entire judgment the Gemara is going to derive from Psukim, and the final verdict, if we can close the door, that would be great, has to be handed down by Yom. So Rabosai, it means that the scheduling should be done lechatchil in such a way in a capital case that they could finish the job during the day. Now, if they didn't come to any decision during the day, they're going to have to postpone the judgment till tomorrow. Now, that's okay. In Dinei Nefashos, you can postpone the final verdict till the following day. But let's say the final verdict was guilty, then they can't allow any postponement. We're going to soon see that the condemned murderer, let's say in that case, has to be put to death on the very same day that Beis Din handed down their decision. So there's an ability with regard to the masu matna of the case to delay the final process till the next day, but not as far as implementing the death penalty. That has to be done on the same day. Dini Mominus Gomrin Bo Bayom Bein Lischus Bein Lechova. Dini Nefashos Gomrin Bo Bayom Lischus Ubayom Shali Achrov Lechova. In the case of Dini Nefashos, in the case of Dini Mominos, and David, I'll answer your question a little later. I just want to see if we can turn the page at least before they yell brachas out. So I apologize for that. So again, in Dini Mominos, they could finish up the case and hand down a final verdict on Bayom, V'Gom Bayom, on the same day. Everything can happen on the same day. But that's Bain Bayom Ubain Bain Luschus Ubain Lechova. But with regard to Dini Nefashos, the regulations are a little bit more limited, and gomrim bo bayom lischus ubayom shali achrov lechova. On that very same day, they don't have to wait another day, they don't have to sleep on it, they acquitted the accused, and they could hand down that verdict on that very same day. But the Mishnah says, let's say they're about to come to a conclusion. Again, I don't know exactly how you know that, you know, maybe they can tell by the way the winds are blowing that after all these deliberations, they are about to condemn. You know, the head of the business says, we see that the decision is going to be lechova, that we're going to condemn this accused to death. Then they cannot issue that final verdict on that day. They have to, what we call, sleep on it. And maybe over the course of the night, one of the judges will come up with a new argument, l'schus. L'fichach, as a result of this, since we have to delay in the case of chova by the final decision overnight, ein dodim lo be'erev Shabbos lo be'erev Yontif. The law is as following, that you cannot put to death someone on Yontif or on Shabbos. Again, that's a complicated sugya in Masechet Shabbos. I'm not exactly sure whether it comes under the Malach of Netilas Neshama, or there's a separate Isur that the Torah created that we don't punish a person on Shabbos. It's antithetical to Shabbos. But whatever it is, the bottom line is you cannot put the accused who's been condemned to death, you cannot implement the death penalty on Shabbos or on Yontif. So now it turns out like this. If the judgment will be on Erev Shabbos, correct, and the law is that in Dini Nefashos the final verdict has to wait overnight, which means that they won't be able to issue the final verdict to condemn the accused, if that's the way the winds are blowing, until Shabbos. So that's okay, but the law is that he has to be put to death immediately on the same day as the verdict to condemn him was handed down. And in this case, they can't put him to death because of Shabbos and Yontif. So we cannot start the din on Erev Shabbos or Erev Yontif.
That's the din of a capital crime.
In a capital crime. Dinei Mominus. Just excuse me for 1 minute.
So, Boisa, can you please close the door because I can't hear myself?
Say.
Now, to finish up the Mishnah says the following. Dine momenos, hatumos, vataros, maschilim, minagodol. In certain cases, which we're trying basically to accomplish two goals. Number one, to simply judge the case. We have no vested interest in the final outcome. The Torah doesn't tell us v'tzilu ha'edah. This is not a capital case. Then we have another element that we have to introduce into the equation, and that is we have to have give kavod to the dayanim. And the dayanim fit into different levels based on their chachma and so forth, their experience. So there's somebody called the gadol. And let's begin the delations by deferring and giving honor. This is called Kvod Talmidei Chacham, it's a mitzvah in the Torah, to that judge which is the Gadol. He's the most prominent of all the judges. But in Dini Nefashos, where we have vested interest, the agenda is to find the accused guiltless, Maschil Min Atzad, we start from the less of the prominent judges, the lesser of the judges. Why? Because if we start with the most eminent and he has an argument against the accused, it's going to be very difficult for the other judges to, in a sense, argue against him and debate against him. And since we have a vested interest here in coming to a conclusion, the tzilu eida, that the judge person is going to be acquitted, then we'd rather not start with the gadol, because if we start with the gadol, That's going to be very dangerous, and it might sway the whole court in the direction of lechov. Again, it could be that the gadol will start with a schuz. We don't know, but since we don't know, we don't want to take any chances. Hakol ksherim ladun dini mominus v'ein hakol ksherim ladun dine nefashos elakonim levim b'israelim hamasim lakuna. With regard to dini nefashos, the yuchsin of the judge is a critical precondition in his qualification as a judge. Who could qualify as a judge? Only someone who is miyuchas. As far as judges in Dine Momenos, we've seen over and over again that just about anyone could serve on a court. We even had cases, if you remember, of Roy Bakar, what? Of shepherds and so forth. But with regard to Dini Nefashos, the Gemara is going to derive from Sukkim that the Torah requires miyuchas. Now, in yuchsin, there are two categories. This is not for a 2-minute discussion. There's something called yuchsei kahuna, and then there's called yuchsei kahal. Now, there are many people who can marry into the Jewish congregation if they're not mamzerim, but that's only called kahal. There's a higher standard called kahuna. And for kahuna, you know, if I'm a kohen and I want to marry my daughter off, then there are higher standards of yuchsin. There are certain psulim which are called halolim and so on that apply to kahuna. So any of those psulim will disqualify a judge for dinei nefashos. So the Gemara is going to derive that from psukim. Let's see the Gemara's kasha now. Dini momenos. Can it be that Dini Momenos mi be'in and drish v'chakira? I'm going to prove to you that in fact Dini Momenos, monetary cases, did not require drisha v'chakira. What the Gemara doesn't know yet at this point is the famous takana that we've discussed in the past and appears all over the place called shalotinol delis v'fnei lovin, which means that we want to encourage people to extend loans, and therefore the Chachamim made various takanas to bend the law and make it easier for the, you know, to sort of calm down the malva who's extending a loan, that he should be able to claim his loan. But the Gemara is not aware of that now. The Gemara is assuming right now that we're going straight with the Din Doraisa, and therefore the requirements of Eidus and qualifications for Eidus are identical in Dini Momenos to Dini Nefashos Rabini. But I'll ask you a question from a Braisa. Shtar Shizmano Kosuv Bi Echad B'Nisan Bi Shmita. In other words, the way that they calculated the year, which year it was they would say what year it was in the Shemitah counting. So now the Shtar says that the Zman of this Halvav, let's say of this loan, was on the 1st of Nisan. Ubo Eidim V'Yomru, and now there's what's called Hazama, which is called Imanu Ayisem, and the Eidim testify in court against the witnesses who are signed on this shtar, hechatem me'idim al shtar zeh, how can you testify regarding this loan, valo b'yom ploni, on the date that's written in the shtar, imono yisim b'makom ploni? The shtar has two elements. Number one, it tells you the date, when was the shtar written, and number two, it tells you the location, where was the shtar written. On that date, your location was not there, as it says in the shtar, you were with us elsewhere. In such a case, is shtar kosher v'eid of ksherim. You see that even though we, in general, we require what's called eid shatiach lazima, and we have to be very careful that the witnesses testify pinpointing a date and a time so that now they could be subject to azama, yet this shtar is kosher despite the azama process. Apparently, we don't take the date and the location all that seriously. And why is that? Why is that so? So the Gemara goes on and explains: Chayshinon Shema Ichru Uksavuhu. What does this mean? It's very possible that the Love told the Edom to write the shtar, and they wrote the shtar on a certain date, right? But the Edom delayed writing the shtar. Why? Because they didn't yet see the Matan Mos, meaning the Lover told them on a Sunday to write the shtar that he wants to give over to the Malva. The Edim waited until Monday when the actual Matan Mos, the money, was given over. In the meantime, the date on the shtar is not accurate because, in truth, the loan did not take place on that date. It took place on a different date. And that's called Ichru Vikisvu. So for some reason, whatever...
If the shtar was post-dated, Ichru.
Right, Ichru means post-dated. So the date on the shtar is not accurate, it's inconclusive, and therefore it doesn't lend itself to azama. If you're going to take the Mishnah literally. The inon that we require with regard to Eidus and Dini Mominos. Drisha v'chakira, hechi chayshinon, shema Ichru v'kasvua. The shtar is considered as if it was subject to drisha v'chakira, in which we clarified exactly the accuracy of the date. If the accuracy of the date has been validated, and that's what drisha v'chakira is all about, then the shtar should be disqualified under the law of hazama. You're telling me no, the hazama doesn't operate here. The shtar is still valid because the date is not accurate. Well, that's mutually exclusive from requiring the drisha v'chakira. So the Gemara says, "Ulutameich." The Makshan could have asked the kasha from a Mishnah. You know, the Gemara operates with the rule that when you have a kasha from a Brisa, but you could ask the same kasha from a Mishnah. You know, not everyone knew the Brisa, but you could. Everyone should know the Mishnah. You should ask from a Mishnah. And the Mishnah says, "Shtarei chov hamukdarim psulim v'amucharim ksherim." That if you have a shtar which is post-dated, then it's valid. V'isal kedai to be'inon drish v'chakira is mucharim amai. Ksherim, how can we validate such a shtar that's when we say post-dated, was that the phrase? Yeah. That's post-dated, shtar ma'ucha. How can a shtar ma'ucha be kosher? Meaning that the date on the shtar is not accurate. If the date on the shtar is not accurate, then obviously there was no drisha v'chakira. The whole purpose of drisha v'chakira is to investigate the eidim, make sure we have it down pat, and we know exactly when this took place. And now the Gemara goes through an entire discussion about why the Makshan did not want to ask from the Mishnah. We'll just read it very quickly. We don't have the time to go through this. This is quite complicated. You have to know a lot about the laws of Shemitah. Halokasha dadifa minei kamrinon. I have a better kasha from the Braisa and a weaker kasha from the Mishnah. Why? Because dafilu echad benisan b'shemitah delo shchichi inshli demuzvei. There, you know, at the end of the Shemitah year, there's something called Shemitas Ksofim, which means all debts are cancelled, annulled, and voided. And what you want to do is, you want to make sure that the shtar is valid on the date right before Shemitah will cancel the. So in a case of a Shemitah, and that's what it says in the Brisa, it says, Echad Benisim B'Shemitah, then people do not, you know, they don't want to play these games, and therefore you would definitely assume that the shtar is accurate. Lekel neimer shema ichru ksuvua. They would never delay the writing of the shtar because the shtar has to be written on time. Delomari l'shtare, and they don't want in any way undermine the validity of the shtar, and that has to be accomplished in such a way that the shmita will not be meshamet the chov. And the Brisa says, "Afilu hachi came in the shvius sofa mishametes machshirin." But there's a law in shmita that's called sofa mishametes, and therefore we're going to validate the shtar, even if it means that we have to question the accuracy of the date of the shtar and call it a shtar meuchar. And the only way of understanding that is if you assume that we have suspended the laws of drisha v'chakira. So the Gemara says, "Mikol makom kasha." Even if you'll tell me that the Mishnah is not such a convincing argument, but nevertheless, there still is a question from the Braisa. And now the Gemara offers four different answers to this question. That's called Chet, Resh, Pei, Shin. The Chet is Rabbi Chanina's answer. Omer Rabbi Chanina, Dvar Torah, Echad Dinei Momenos, the Echad Dinei Nefashos B'Drisha V'Chakira. According to the Torah law, we require in all cases Drisha V'Chakira. Shenemar Mishpat Echad Yilachem, as the Mishnah already derived from that pasuk. Umatam Omru Dini Momenos Lo Be'in and Drisha V'Chakira. How can we validate a shtar and discount the Hazoma by saying that the date on the shtar is not accurate? The answer is that's a takonis chachamim, kedesh lo tinol deles bifnei lovin. We don't want to close the door in the face of the malvin. We want to encourage the malvin to know that if he has recourse to a bezin to get his money back, he will be able to do so, and therefore we're not going to require that the testimony that he adduces to support his claim against the lover will have to be subjected to all those drishas v'chakiras, which makes it very difficult to come up with edim that could support his claim. So we'll just end with the next line, Elameata, and here we turn to Daf Lamed Beis. If this be the case, then Tohu lo yishalmu. Why do we have a law that in such cases where the judge has made an error, they have to pay damages? In such a case, you are really discouraging the whole process, because you're telling me that the judges are going to have to pay damages. They shouldn't be liable to pay damages. They didn't have the opportunity to examine the witnesses thoroughly. You made a takada that they don't have to go through and subject the witnesses to interrogation of drisha v'chakira. If you waive the requirement of drisha v'chakira, then you should also waive the liability of the judges. And the Gemara answers, Kol shkein shetinol delis bifnei lovin. And if you alleviate the responsibility of the judges to pay in a case where they made a mistake, and if they judge and issue a verdict finding the lover not liable, right, that's called l'schus ha-lover, then the malvah lost his money. And why did the malvah lost his money? Because he has no recourse to get his money back. Why? Because the judges don't have to pay him in a case where they erred in judgment. So therefore we have to assume that the original Doraisa halacha, that if the judges made a mistake, nevertheless they will pay damages and compensate, in this case the malva. That's going to encourage the malva to extend the halva.
So the one side is good for the loving, and on the other side it's bad for them. It's a very sad.
Right.